Hey, InterVarsity alumni. This is After Four, your podcast for navigating life after graduation. This is both an exciting and potentially tricky transition that you're making, and you might feel a little unsure about the coming weeks and months. We're here to provide you with expert advice, practical skills, and plenty of encouragement as you learn how to keep saying yes to Jesus in your new context. This is After Four, and this podcast is for you, alumni. What's up, alumni? Welcome to After Four, your podcast for navigating life after graduation. I'm your host and guide, John Steele. Well, we've reached the halfway point in our series about vocational transition, about making the move into full-time work after graduation and partnering with Jesus in that space. We've learned about work in the university setting as a professor. We've chatted with a nurse, and we've heard from an alum working in the world of corporate finance. And whether or not you're stepping into one of those jobs specifically, we've been learning a lot of great lessons about navigating work life in healthy and meaningful ways. Today, we're jumping into a new work context. We're going to be chatting with Lydia Goldie, an alumna from the Juilliard School, who's learning what it looks like to partner with Jesus as an artist and specifically as a vocalist. She's going to share about hard work, finding purpose with Jesus in the midst of rejection, and balancing jobs that pay the bills while pursuing her calling in creative spaces. The great news for Lydia is that her job that pays the bills is also something she's incredibly good at. I'm excited to share her story with you. Here's Lydia, and this one's for you, alumni. Hello, Lydia. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, so good to be here.
Oh, so glad that we can jump on together here. I'm looking forward to continuing together in this series that we're doing on After Four right now, talking about vocational transition, moving from full-time student life into full-time work life, and what that looks like for our alumni in sort of different career paths. And so you'll have a unique take on that with the work that you're doing. But first, Lydia, will you just help us get to know you? Can you just give us a quick introduction here?
Yes, my name is Lydia Goldie. I am originally from a small town in Kentucky in the middle of the state called Danville. I grew up singing. My sister was a pianist, and so she would come home from children's choir and like give me songs that they were learning, and she would play, and I would sing. And I like entered the county fair at age 5 and like
won
third place. And like, so singing was always something that was like, that's part of who I am. And when I was in like late elementary school, I started getting into like community theater, musical theater. That was definitely like my goal young, was like Broadway.
Okay.
I wanted to do that. And then when I got into private voice lessons in middle school, my teacher was like, no, like you have an opera voice. And
oh.
I was like, I didn't even know that existed anymore. So I like saw my first opera when I was like 13. I thought it was super cool. But I still was like very like, okay, I'll do theater. I'll do some opera. But then this is crazy. I went to church camp. Classic. I went to my childhood church camp, like going into freshman year of high school. And I went up one night at the altar. They were doing like calling into missions, actually, which I never felt a calling to. But in a way, I went up to the altar and I saw myself like a vision the Lord gave me of me singing opera in a big red dress on a big stage. And
wow.
Then, like, running off to the wings and like seeing the Father on his throne and like crawling in his lap and him being so happy. And like, it was so vivid. And I was like, okay,
wow.
I guess I'm going to do opera. And so throughout high school, of course, I kept doing the theater stuff, cause that's all there is really in this part of the country. It's like musical theater, but I was training with my teachers, like more classically, and, ended up auditioning for all the big conservatories and summer programs and ended up in New York at Juilliard for my undergraduate studies. And then I stayed there for my graduate studies. So I was there for 6 years, graduated with
okay.
my master's in 2022. So I'm only less than 2 years out of school myself.
Okay, yeah.
And I lived in New York for a little while after I graduated until I got married.
Nice.
I moved back home because my husband and I actually grew up together in Kentucky. Like we were just like buddies growing up. And then during COVID, we were like a COVID love story. I was calling up some old friends and he was someone I called up. So we started dating in 2020, got married in around Christmas of 2022. So I'm just over a year married too. And we're here in Lexington, Kentucky, which is one of like the two big cities people know. He's in school right now and I'm here auditioning for as many opera companies or musical theater companies that will hear me virtually in person when I can, and teaching in my own private voice studio. I have about 23 students from ages 12 to 25 that I teach on a weekly basis. So that was long, but that's a bit of me.
That's awesome. Wow. I didn't realize that you were that recently graduated and that recently married. I love that. You're going to have some really fresh insight for us in of these things. That's great. That's so great. And you said you're from Kentucky. Okay. Little sidebar here. You do much exploring and tooling around in like Daniel Boone National Forest or anything like that?
Oh my gosh. We love hiking. So yeah, like we're at Red River Gorge a lot in Eastern Kentucky. My brother went to school in the mountains. Both our parents are from Eastern Kentucky. So we love going to the mountains and also like the caves. So Western Kentucky, we've got Mammoth Cave, which is the second biggest cave in the world. So we've got a lot of awesome nature here we like to explore for
sure. Nice. I'm from Indiana originally. And so we did some family trips down to Kentucky, in particular to Red River Gorge and to do the Via Ferrata rock climbing that they've got down there. And I highly recommend it. Looking it up. Have some great memories in Kentucky with my family. So fun to like, okay, yes. I have to sort of get a feel for where you're coming from here. And Lydia, you're an InterVarsity alumna as well.
Yeah. So InterVarsity, my first running into them was in the cafeteria at Juilliard. Ended up joining like the leadership team, like second semester there. I was just always super involved in my church. So that felt like a natural thing to go right in and just be super involved and be part of the team.
So, I mean, super early in your career on campus, you're meeting up with InterVarsity involved through most of the way through even your master's degree. And then not too long after that, you're graduating and moving into this next phase of life. And so I'm interested to hear a little bit about that transition for you as you think about just in the last couple of years here making this move. What was your experience like transitioning from full-time student, especially in this like Juilliard master's degree context, into full-time work rhythms, whatever that means for you in this season of life? Like, What's that been like? And in particular, how is the work that you're doing in the arts, like how has that colored that transition for you?
Mm-hmm. Oof. It's a really hard transition. I think going from conservatory, especially like this place that everyone around you is so high caliber of artists and like people who are your age. And you have to just remember, like, these are not normal people. Like, these are not normal singers. Like, they are very gifted to be able to sing at the caliber they do at the age they do. And so you're fed this narrative, I think, when you go to like very high, you know, caliber universities, whatever field, but especially like in the arts, I guess, of like this field, like you go in opera, at least undergrad, masters, you get into young artist program, you get management, and then you work. And that's just not how singers have ever been. Like, that's not how it works for the vast majority of singers. And like the tiny percent get to do that. But then when you're at Juilliard, your friends are that tiny percent. Like, you're seeing these people. It's like, okay, you just get into the young artist program across the street at the Metropolitan Opera or Houston Grand Opera. But it's because you're around these like crazy, amazing people. And then you think that's normal, but it's not. And it's hard for you to like separate, like, that doesn't make me less of a singer. That doesn't mean I'm not just as qualified or as good as they are, but you didn't match the agenda that the school fed you. So then you're like, okay, I failed. So for me, like, coming out of my degree, all of my final year of master's, I was taking a bunch of auditions for young artist programs, for main stage, whatever I could get my hands on. And they were all no. And I ended up not even having a summer contract, which even as a student, you often end up like in the summer going, whether it's getting paid to sing or going for like a free fellowship or whatever it is, like you usually have something this summer. And I didn't even have a summer contract. So I was like, dang, I really did just graduate from Juilliard and I'm home in Kentucky sitting in my childhood bedroom. Like, that was what? And in that time I was like, well, I need to make money, so I guess I'm going to teach. And that was something I was very like, nope, because I guess I was a person who fed into the like, well, if you can't do teach, which is like the worst quote to ever be invented.
Right. Yes.
But my teacher at Juilliard, she had always been like, you should do teach. Like, why not? Like, just make some extra money. Like, you'd be a great teacher. But my thing was, it was really fear. Like, I don't think I'm qualified enough to teach someone else. I don't even feel like I have my craft mastered. And a voice is so fragile. I don't want to hurt anyone else's and yada, yada, yada. But I was kind of thrown into it. And Lord was like, you're teaching this summer. And literally I posted on Facebook like, hey guys, I'm home. I'm trying to build a little studio. And within 3 days I had 10 students.
Wow.
So I was just like, okay, God, fine. Like, guess that's what I'm supposed to be doing right now. So I took that as like, okay, well this summer I'll just make some extra cash, like teaching kids. And then I'll be back in the city this fall, taking auditions and get my gig and like, don't have to teach anymore. Little did I know, like the Lord was building my salary for the years to come in a sense with those 10 students. I kept a handful of them and virtually when I was back in the city. And then after I was married, my studio grew to what it is now. Like I said, in the 20s. So, yeah, that's become like a big part of what I do, which was very hard at first because I saw it as very humbling and very like a failure. I saw it as a failure, but it took a long time for me. Actually, my husband was super convicting to me. He said, Lydia, the Lord has given you like so many gifts to use. And if you're not using them, you're depriving other people of what the Lord has for them. And you're also like saying to God, like, nah, I don't want to pour into that one. I just want to pour into this one. And there are plenty of people that only do get one to pour that have like the performing. That's their thing. That's all they're going to do. But I have this opportunity to like pour into so many gifts, especially in this season. And that's not to say I'm not a singer. Like I'm a singer first. I still spend hours and hours and hours auditioning and performing when I can. But, yeah. So just like figuring out, wow, my identity doesn't have to be this one part of music. It can be multiple things in this field. And I think that's a lie that a lot of artists feed into too, is you go to school for the one thing. And if you're not doing just that one thing when you leave, you're like, well, I failed. And it's like, no, what artist ever has only made money performing? That's just not how this career works, no matter what college you went to or how refined your resume is, you know.
It sounds like there's a lot of like mental and emotional hurdles that come along with making this transition. That there's the temptation to compare of, okay, I've been surrounded by all of these talented people, and if you get the job, it means that you are really as great as everybody says you are. If you don't get the job, then it means that you're less than. And so that there's that element of comparison that goes on. And it sounds to me like there's also some amount of like, I have to be okay dealing with rejection because I'm going to audition. And I'm going to get told no a lot. Yes. I can just imagine that those are some of the things that you're dealing with mentally and emotionally as you make that transition.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's gruesome out there, like auditioning. I've been talking to a lot of friends recently, both like actor friends and singer friends, just like, it's very disheartening. It's not even the word. It lacks any sort of human. It's funny because we all go into this industry because we feel deeply, because we're very human. I think artists are soft in a sense and empathetic and love doing this because it's so full of community and love and acceptance. And then you go into audition rooms with three people who stare at a sheet of paper while you wear your heart on your sleeve and give them your heart. And they won't even look at you. So it's like, I went into this because of my heart. And then you're sitting there. Oh, it's almost traumatizing. Like not even accepting the gift I'm trying to give you. So yeah, it's super disheartening. And it's a big mental game of how you go about auditioning in general is a whole practice and skill you have to learn in itself. And hopefully schools prepare you for that, but nothing prepares you for it until you're just in the trenches.
You mentioned that you're doing lots of auditions, like anytime an audition's coming your way, you're jumping into that, you're taking the audition, and you have this this school that you're teaching, this like these vocal classes that you're teaching and all of these students. To me, that sounds like a lot going on, maybe not the most consistent schedule, depending on audition schedules and when those come and go. So talk to me about like work-life balance in that kind of a setting. What does it look, what are you learning about the hazards and the things that are helpful? Like what are you learning about navigating work-life balance in this career setting?
Yes. I mean, I think coming out of school, that was just work, 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 work. And it's hard to find I honestly think it's easier to find a work-life balance outside of school.
Interesting.
A lot of artists, alum from Juilliard, would come back and say, like, you know, the real world is way chiller than it is in this building. And it's so true. Mm. Like, even how, like, companies operate and how rehearsals flow, like, it's just way more chill, at least compared to, like, you know, the big conservatories. Like, everyone's got their panties in a wad there. Like, it's just like way more free outside of there, which is an encouragement for whoever's listening. But yes, you're right. I think it's hard as an artist, as a performer, because you're always going to have that side gig. You just are. Like, you're going to have to, like, get out of school and make money somehow. And it's not always going to be through singing or performing or whatever your thing is. And you have to remember, okay, but I am a singer first. Because it's so easy. Like, because the Lord has blessed my studio and my students do enjoy their lessons. They tell their friends. And then a lot of people are like, can I have lessons? I want lessons. But I have to say, nope, we're going to cap it. Like, I have to cap it at 20 students or then I don't have time for my own singing, which is the goal, right? This
yeah.
is so that I can do this thing. And I was just talking to a friend of mine who's an actor, and she, same thing happened to her. She's a nanny in the city. And but she's an actor first, and she was supposed to go on this family vacation to nanny at the beach. But then this massive audition came up that was perfect for her during the vacation. She was like, I feel like I have to go. Like, they have a plane ticket. Like, I need to go. But she was like wrestling inside. And then days later she came back. She's like, I just went to the mom. I said, I really need to do this audition. And they let her come down late. So I think just like remembering, you know, this is the thing first. And it's so easy to fall into the money and the fear of that. And like, feeling or even like you're probably good at your other gig and you want to like pour in, especially when you're feeling like really dry season and you're performing, but the other one's super fruitful. It's like, okay, well, I'll pour all of it into this gig,
yeah.
this thing that I do. But then you aren't feeding the other gift as much as you need to, the thing that you're really supposed to be doing or you feel like you're supposed to be doing. So long-winded answer of saying it's very busy, and a lot of my hours in teaching and performing both are opposite the rest of the world. Even when I'm performing, it's like my shows are Wednesday night through Sunday, you know, they're all 7 to 10. So my husband's at school all day, gets home, and then I go to work. So it's definitely opposite how the rest of the world works in a lot of ways. And you have to figure out a balance, especially when you do have a husband or you do start having a family. But even with your own family or your own friends, like just really planning, for example, like my Wednesdays are my purposeful days where I don't teach. Where I can really pour everything into other things I need to be doing, whether that's getting lunch with a friend or catching up on my own audition, sending in tapes or like filming self tapes or having a voice lesson, like having a day or having certain times every day that you guard. And I think school does that really well for you. Like school, you have a schedule. School gives you performances. School puts you in coachings and voice lessons and hours for everything. And then you get out and you're like, oh, wait, I have to practice. I should still have voice lessons. I should have a coaching, but you have to schedule it. Like no one's going to do that for you. So it takes a lot of self-discipline, I think, to navigate, okay, still pouring into your work, pouring into growing within your work and also being a human. And that just takes a lot. But I think if you're doing school right, I think a big skill that you learn is how to navigate time management. Well,
yeah,
in a surrendered way to the Lord, and then carrying that out of school into your life is very necessary. So,
yeah, my mom used to have this phrase. Mom, if you're listening, here you go. My mom still has this phrase. She says it. I hear her say it from time to time now, even. And that's the good and the better are the enemies of the best. And it sounds to me like that comes into play very often with some of these. Like, okay, I'm a singer first. I am auditioning for these things. I'm an actor first. I am a fill in the blank first. And there are these other things that God has gifted me with that I can do to pay the bills for now. But when the time comes for an audition, even if it's at the expense of this other thing, like that's what I'm called to do. Mm-hmm. So I need to step into best. I need to embrace the best, even if there's a risk in that. even if it means, okay, I'm clear, I'm capping the number of students that I can take to make sure that there's space, even though I could take twice as many students. I have that many available to me if I wanted to, and that could pay the bills and I'd be good to go. It's like, no, God's called me to be this thing. And so I'm going to protect the space because it's the best. Even though these other things aren't bad, they're good. They might be great, but they're not the thing that I've been called into full time. Lydia, as we think about Jesus loves the arts. He loves the people that you are surrounding yourself with. He's gone before you into that place and is already at work. So what does it look like in this context to partner with Jesus as an artist, as a vocalist, as somebody who's auditioning for all of these roles, as somebody who's a part of a company? You know, what does it look like to step into that with Jesus?
I think it can look like so many different things. My first thought is that how you go about your work and how you find your identity in it is so different than those around you. And I think that's the first thing that points them to Jesus. Like, I'm thinking about the rejections, I'm thinking about the auditions, and obviously I'm a person, like I fall into the mentality of, oh, I didn't get that one. Like I'm failing. Like I'm a bad singer, yada, 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 but that's not true. And more often than not, it's like, this is not my identity. This is my work, right? Like I am a child of God. I feel called to do this. It's been very clear that I should be singing. So if that's not the door open for me now, then that's not the door open for me now. But for someone who doesn't know Jesus, when a door shuts that they want so bad, or all the doors shut that they thought they had a chance at, it's like, whoa, what do I do? Who am I? Questioning everything. So I think the way you combat rejection is a big indicator to other people around you of your faith. They're like, well, how are you okay? You know, how are you okay? And that just opens the door for like talking about identity and talking about where that's actually found, and it's not in your singing, right? So I think that's one very subtle way that you can invite Jesus into that space. I think this was something that the Lord really put on my heart like a year into auditioning after school, was whenever I would get denied from auditions, to start thinking of it not as a personal thing, but actually as a way for another person to get the opportunity. That sounds so twisted, but pause. So like I have to be there so that the person that's supposed to get the gig gets the gig, because whoever's watching is going to choose that person over me. And the Lord knows that they're going to choose that person over me. This is maybe really twisted, but then that gives me an active role in the space. Like the Lord is putting me here so that somebody else can walk in their calling. This isn't my opportunity. It's theirs. Wow. I'm helping them walk into that. And then it gives me like a sense anytime I go, whether I'm rejected or I get it, I had to be there, whether it's for somebody else to get it, whether it's because the judges on the panel like needed to sense Holy Spirit in the space that day, and I carry that in me, whatever it is. To give myself like an active role because of Jesus. I think that's another way. And then like teaching in general, like getting to be a teacher. Come on. Like that's obviously, you can pour so much into people and just the love of Jesus. And so many of my students, especially since I'm in the South, are like at least Sunday Christians and like at least operate in that theology. So that's something, especially when they do their first competitions or they don't get cast in what they want at school or whatever it is. Like I, because I'm a believing teacher, can be like, hey, I almost like said one of my kids' names, hey, Susie, you know, like, you know, that your worth is not found in singing. Like this is a beautiful gift that you have that you get to share, but that's not who you are. So like, we're just going to keep building that gift. And then next time we'll see what happens. So like just getting to cultivate that in a 16-year-old before they hit the real world. And it's like, blah, if they decide to go into singing, is a real gift in a way that, you know, obviously the Lord's using me in this season. So.
Gosh, just like the freedom that it seems like that makes space for, to just say, I'm just going to show up. I'm going to do the thing that God has called me to do. And we'll see where it goes by the end of the day. But I know that my identity is in Jesus and that I'm just a part of living into his calling and his work in this space. Lydia, as we think about alumni who are about to graduate or who are in that first year of life after graduation, is there a final piece of advice that you would give to someone who is about to step into this type of work or something similar that maybe we haven't touched on yet?
Yes. Forewarning, 20s, being in your 20s as an artist is tragically bad. Like, it's just like, it's hard, as hard as people say, and it's harder. And I remember I had a friend who was talking to a professor of ours from college, and this professor looked at her. She said, just in case no one has told you, like, this is the hardest time in your life. Like, it just is. And my friend was like, that it was the biggest relief, because no one talks about it. No one talks about once you leave it, it's all sunshine and roses. You're going to go be a singer now. No, you sang more in school, probably, you know? So just this, I want to encourage you that it will be very hard, and you have to have tough skin. Like, you've been told your whole life, because artists are like, you have to have tough skin to do this. You do, but your tough skin doesn't come from you, right? It comes from the Lord. But within that, it being really hard, you got to rest on your calling. Like, if you know that the Lord has called you into this, remind yourself of that. And in addition, remind yourself of all the things that have told you that so far. Like, so many times I'm going back, like, I know I'm supposed to sing. I went to Juilliard. I did 2 degrees at Juilliard. I did this gig. And not to say that my accomplishments are who I am, but it's easy to, when you're in the midst of it, to just be like, I fail. I'm not good at singing. It's like, no, I wouldn't have accomplished all these things if I weren't good at this. And if this weren't obviously something the Lord has for me. So just continue to remind yourself of, like, that first love, knowing that, you know, that there's a reason you are doing what you're doing. So, like, just like, I don't know, put 110% into where the Lord has you now. Might not look like what you thought, but it's exactly where you should be. And you'll know that 5 years from now. So, yeah.
That's great. If there are any alumni or other listeners who are close by, are there any performances or things that are coming up in the near future that they can come check out?
For me, I'm waiting for a few, you know, companies for summer stuff right now. But
sure.
I do often do a recital yearly in my hometown. Does this become a tradition of mine? And I'm planning to do it this summer. So if you want to Google me, I have my website. I keep it updated.
Lydia, thank you so much for joining me today, for sharing these stories, for painting a picture of what it looks like to step into the world of the arts, the world of a vocalist who's wanting to pursue the gifts and the passions that the Lord has given to you. And yeah, but what does it look like to make that transition and to follow Jesus through the bumps in the road and the twists and the turns, and what it looks like to follow that calling? So thanks a lot for helping us get a better sense of what that looks like.
Yeah, for sure. It's been so fun. I'm glad to be here.
I love Lydia's final word of encouragement, to put 110% into where the Lord has you now. It might not look like what you thought, but it's exactly where you should be. And yes, I acknowledge that that's spoken by and affirmed by two people who have the benefit of time and experience to look back on, but so do you. Maybe it's not in your post-graduation context at this point, but you must have a period in your life that you can look back on and say, I didn't understand then, but now I get it. The Lord's doing the same thing in your life now. Just give it time and do the very best that you can with what He's given you to do today. Whether you're a classically trained vocalist, an artist in general, or an alum from literally any other profession, remember that the Lord wastes nothing. The place where you're standing right now is the place that He's called you to be a part of His work and to keep growing in your own gifts and discipleship. Just give it time. Lydia, thank you so much for joining me today, and thanks for sharing about your experience as an artist and a vocalist sorting out this post-graduation transition, and blessings as you keep auditioning and as you keep coaching kids in their own talents. I hope you see God's goodness in some really special ways this summer. All right, alumni, next week we're talking with Ace Patterson, a UC Berkeley alumnus, musician, and mobile gaming developer who's going to share about his experience as an entrepreneur after graduation. He also schools me on the correct terminology for someone in his line of work. Awesome chat coming your way next week. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you in the after, alumni. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today, alumni. If there was anything that you learned, really enjoyed, or that encouraged you from today's episode, would you send us a DM or tag us in a story? We'd love to hear about it. You can find us at After4Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, take just a second to unlock your phone and subscribe to the podcast. If your platform lets you, leave us a rating and a review. And if you like what we're doing here, share us with your InterVarsity or other post-graduation friends. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you in the after, alumni.